the Cold Canvas Radio Show. Your home for the latest news in boxing, MMA, and pro wrestling with Big Al Brody on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, this is professional wrestling superstar and hardcore legend Raven, and you are listening to the Cold Canvas Radio Show. You know, the old Cold Canvas Radio Show. Quote the Raven, nevermore.
And welcome, folks, to the Cold Canvas Radio Show, coming at you from 12 Kings Pub, Vancouver's one and only home of combat sports at 395 Kingsway. You'll have to pardon my excitement. I'm all jacked up on cheese curds and St. Hubert gravy from Frenchie's Diner, which is just down the street on the corner of Main and Broadway. And listen, if you haven't been for an authentic taste of Montreal, well, you're just a loser. And if Brody the Bull spots you, you better have your bags packed up and ready for an all-expenses-paid trip to Dirt Nap City. So much to talk about on this episode. Now, look, I could dedicate the whole hour talking about this weekend's release of Sonic the Hedgehog, everyone's favorite blue high-speed ring-stealing shrew. I could also easily rant about the return of my favorite league and the only football league that should matter, the XFL. I could even delve into the world of music, gab on about the announced reunion tour of one in rock and roll's greatest bands. Of course, I'm talking about Godsmack. All ripe and urgent subject matters, but unfortunately they all pale in comparison to an athletic achievement that transpired that may very well be the greatest feat in human history. American hero Joey Chestnut, the hot dog king of Coney Island, reigning champion of Nathan's 4th of July hot dog eating challenge. Well, he paid a little visit to New Orleans over the weekend for a bit of a light lunch. He entered the rice and beans challenge, where he devoured 24 pounds and 11 ounces in 8 minutes. For his extraordinary efforts, he took home the top prize of $1,500. The closest competitor, Manuel Castro, he finished with 6 pounds and 2 ounces. His wife remarked that she was proud of her husband's efforts, but he'll be known as Manuel Gastro around the house for the next month. On today's program, we've got Professor Lucas joining us from Gracie Baja, the city's top jiu-jitsu academy, where you can sign up today and score an entire free month of training. It's where you'll find the bull rolling as well. We're also going to talk about the profound impact the sport has had on both of our lives. Wrestling Rob's here to talk some AEW. The Revolution card's coming up in about 2 weeks' time. But first, you heard wrestling legend Raven at the beginning of the show, and that is because Wrestling Rob and myself had the chance to chat with him when he visited the Rio Theater, thanks to our good friends over at Got Pop Concerts. Clips from that conversation are coming up right here next on the Cold Canvas Radio. Oh, hold on. I'm told we have a caller on the line. Caller, go ahead.
Greetings, 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 and salutations. I'm rife with joyosity at the opportunity presented by your journalist, Miss Functation. February 22 is the day of days. Combatitatious battles of this magnitudiousness are rare in this age. Fury Wilder 2. Never has there been a sequel this anticipated. Star Wars more like Star Bores compared to this action. The first time out, no one was satisfied with the meagerly results, leaving our bellies full of fight hunger. But now we come for satisfaction. Serendipity has kissed us all on the mouth. The resurrection of boxing is here. Tyson, the Gypsy King Fury, looking to take the glory back to Britain, proudly waving the Jack of Union. Standing in his way is the wild one, Deontay Wilder. Oh, this fight has me filled with excitatious nacity that is percolating inside and giving me a youthful feel. I haven't been this salivatious since the rumble in the jungle. Just know one thing, I'm leaving with the winner. Thank you again for having my expertosity on your programmius. You know where to be when you hear the bell ring. With a beer in your hand, we're down at 12 Kings.
Speaking of American heroes, thank you, Mr. King of Raven, up next on the Cold Canvas Radio Show.
Let's start with your first stint in WCW, if you don't mind, is Scotty Flamingo.
You being a Jersey kid who studied criminology and
criminal justice. Big difference.
And here you are, you're playing a surfer dude from Florida.
That was Dusty's idea.
Who carries a board down with him. I was just curious to know, how much say did you have in the character?
No, none. I didn't have any juice, any clout at all. I mean, I was happy to get a job. But that was Dusty's idea. Dusty liked me. He always liked me.
Nice.
He goes, "You'll be the Flamingo Kid, baby. Scotty Flamingo, the Flamingo Kid." And he had big plans for me. Like, literally, like, he was telling me. And DDP was with me when he was telling me the plans. And he said, and DDP's kicking me under the table because he was going, Dusty's like, "Because I'm going to make you the cruiserweight champion or light heavyweight champion, but then I'm going to have you fight for, because you're big enough, you know, I'm going to have you also fight heavyweights and fight, like, for the heavyweight belt at some point," or, you know, something like, some big push he had planned. And then he gave me JT Southern, which was like an albatross around my neck because JT could not work. But he had a great look, though.
Nice.
But then Bill Watts came in, and Bill Watts didn't have any interest in me. So so that killed that. But, man, but it was crazy. Like, you know, I was fighting to get that. I had to fight to get that job at WCW. And then Dusty's telling me, and then, like, because I kept trying to get in. Like, originally WCW came calling when I was in Portland. But I didn't know if I was ready yet, and so I unintentionally blew him off. But I didn't blow him off, but I didn't keep in touch like I should have. And so then when I was ready, so when I left Portland, then I wanted to come in, and I was in Global. They weren't taking my calls, but DDP went to bat for me with Dusty. And then Dusty told me he's got these big plans for me, like after going from feast or fat, you know, like, not, I mean, having always being booked, but because, you know, I started in Memphis, went right to Florida. Florida went to Vancouver for a month, then went to Portland for 2 years, then went to Global. But I wanted to be in the big time, you know, and this is, so finally, now I can't, they had offered me a job, but I didn't take it because I didn't think I was ready. But they just thought it was, you know, that some arrogance on my behalf, which I can see why with, you know, I was a punk, snot-nosed kid. So now I'm finally getting an opportunity to be there, and they're going to give me this big push. And DDP must have kicked the crap out of me. And he's like, no, because, you know, he was so excited for me, you know.
Nice.
And I'm, you know, but above the table, we were like straight face, solemn, just listening. And underneath, he's kicking the crap out of me. You know, so excited for me he was. And then Watts came in and... And there went that, but it all worked out.
Yeah. Wind out of the sails from Bill Watts, it sounds like.
Yeah. Oh my God. Why? And the funny thing was is that me and Watts, and I mean me and Pillman and Austin became really good friends, and started riding together. And Austin wanted to be a single, and me and Pillman wanted to be a tag team.
Yeah.
So instead, Watts made Pillman and Austin the tag team, which Austin didn't want because Austin wanted to be a singles. Me and Pillman wanted to be a tag. Well, Pillman worked out either way for him. I mean, and then Austin eventually became a singles. And he also loved working with Pillman.
Nice.
But then I got boxed out. And then I thought, man, my career is going to, this could be the end of it.
Yeah.
But then I went to Memphis, and then I went to WWE, and then revitalized the whole thing when I left there.
Nice. When you were in WWE, I think that was my first time I got eyes on you. That was, again, another interesting position. They had you as Johnny Polo coming out with Adam Bomb. I was wondering kind of what that was like when you jumped over to the WWF and then they had you kind of stepping into the manager type role. What was that?
I felt like a major demotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but I was just too small back then. I mean, I wasn't, but I was a small guy back then. I mean,
yeah. Land of the Giants, right?
Yeah, Land of the Giants. Everybody was 280, you know?
Yeah.
And they just didn't see me that way. So. But I knew if I kept plugging in and stayed with it, I'd get something out of this.
Yeah.
And then Vince Lawler had to take time off, so Vince brought me in as a commentator and became really impressed with me because of my quick wit and my and the fact that I prepared. It wasn't hard to leave I was still doing the wraparound segments for All America, the All American show, the Sunday afternoon show, and I think that's when it was. And with Gorilla Monsoon, which, you know, so I was still on camera. But once they took me off of that, because Vince goes, I don't really see it. Raven, I mean, not Raven, Johnny Polo, you're not Johnny Polo at all. I go, I know. He goes, it's total disconnect. I go, I never thought I was Johnny Polo, but I wasn't going to turn down a job.
No.
And he's like, yeah, we're going to take you off TV and just keep you producing. And that's when I was like, nah, I got to quit because I still want to work. Yeah. You know, so I turned down, I walked away from a six-figure job.
Jeez.
Start over. And I was going to go to, and so I talked to Cornette, and he was going to bring me in. And we hadn't really talked about any details about the character so much, but I knew what I wanted to do, and I knew I needed a TV show to show it, you know, because my character's, you know, it works best if it's episodic TV, so you can see, you know, the angles develop, you know, as opposed to the guys that get over in the sheets that could do five-star matches,
yeah.
But you put them in a storyline and they flounder, you know.
Yeah. Can't progress the character. They can put some good in-ring work together, but they can't get that character moving forward.
And so I was always about the character. That's why I never went to Japan for any length of time, because it's not about characters there. It's not about storylines. It's not about, you know, episodic TV.
I'm curious to know, how familiar do you think Vince was with the Raven character when you returned?
I don't think he was at all. I don't think he knew Raven. I think he thought I was... I knew I went to WCW. I think he thought I went to ECW and stayed there and got hired back.
You were involved in one of WWE's top romantic angles, referring to Perry Saturn and Moppy. What are your thoughts looking back on that infamous storyline?
I think they're still in love.
Nice. Do you still keep in touch with Perry? I know he's been going through some
tough times here. Yeah, I got to give him a call.
Nice.
But here's the funny thing is, and so I put the mop in, and I kept thinking, I thought it was going to just get sucked in and shredded, and it didn't. I was like, crap, what am I going to do? Because we didn't have another mop, you know, it was the only mop. So I was like, I remembered Mr. Bill. Remember the Mr. Bill character from Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
He was like a little clay puppet thing, and then he kept getting beat up all the time, and he'd go, oh, no, oh, no, Mr. Bill, oh, no. So I just started making funny noises,
nice.
and it got over, But I was like, I was horrified. I was like, I put it in and
it's live too.
Yeah, and it's live, and it's not going any faster. And I'm trying to push, and it's like, I'm like, I got to kill some time. I was like, oh, this is great. I get to ad lib.
And they're not cutting.
Yeah, I was like, I'll ad lib the crap out of this.
That was during your time in WWF as running through as the hardcore champion. That was defended the 24 hours a day kind of rule.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious how they put together those matches, because you're defending it on Raw, you're defending it in a house show. Like, when you get to the building that day, how do they kind of run down how this hardcore match is going to happen when you were running those 27 reigns that you had?
39. It's actually 39, but they never... for some reason, I tried to correct them, but they won't rewrite history, even though they wrote history wrong to begin with. All right, well, if it was a multiple title drop, like if some they would have in their mind how that, like, if I was going to drop it to Al Snow and Al Snow was going to drop it to Crash, and Crash was going to drop it back to me or something. Mm-hmm. We want this to happen this way. Mm-hmm. Like these particular, you know, we want you to do that, and then let Crash do something, and then does this, and then, so they'd give you the bullet points on that.
Yeah.
But if it was just a singles match, of course you got to fill in all the rest.
Yeah.
And for singles matches, you know, for just me against somebody with no other title people.
Yeah.
We'd walk through the building and we'd try and find different things at every building to use, you know. So I loved it. I love doing that stuff because it lends itself to the creative process.
Definitely.
I think the problem with hardcore matches are that everybody had completely abandoned psychology when they have one. They don't have any plot development. It all turns into a back and forth match.
Yeah.
Instead of psychology, you know, the babyface shine, the heel gets heat, and the babyface makes a comeback. They don't do that. So the matches devolve into just, I'll hit you, you hit me, I'll hit you, you hit me, and then it becomes repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a quality plot, then it doesn't become repetitive.
Yeah.
And I'll maintain that, you know, that's the only reason that hardcore got such a bad rap, and I don't think people ever got tired of it. I think that was just the insiders, the sheets and stuff, crapped on it.
Yeah.
But because they thought it was repetitive, which, you know, but I don't think the fans ever did. The fans love that because they love the excitement, they love the creativity.
Yeah.
But so like you know, I'd walk through the building like, you know, like you know, if I wanted to put my head in the toilet and get the toilet flushed, you know, we'd go find a bath, you know, like how far is the bathroom, you know, from where we're at, you know, or if like, where I get slid down like a, you know, like a bar, but, but we did it with a table into the coffee pots, you know, or whatever, and slid down the catering tray, you know, down like two or three tables.
Nice.
You know, but what, every building was different how the setup was, because it was the same stuff there, but it was set up differently. And every building looks different. So every building has, like, one time, me and Al Snow worked quite a bit. Yeah. And we always wanted to do that. You know, remember in Lethal Weapon where Mel Gibson's getting shocked and his hands are chained and he's chained by his hands above his head and he's getting shocked by this Chinese or Asian, Oriental guy, Asian guy. And he grabs the guy and puts him in a, grabs him by his legs,
yeah.
And then chokes him out with his legs.
Yeah.
Me and Al wanted to do that spot so bad, but we could never find a spot where with any reasons, you know, any psychology for why he or I would climb up a chain to nowhere and then just be hanging and then wait for the other one to come along and choke him. So we never, I don't think we ever did that, but I know we tried to.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, actually, just in regards to when you were fleshing out the character of Raven, just how aware you were of how much of yourself you were putting into it. Or if
yeah,
it was just
yeah.
an organic thing that you looked back on and went, oh, that's
no,
where that
no,
comes
from. I started to realize I was putting a lot of myself.
Yeah.
And then I don't think I realized how much at first. And but I think Paulie did the whole time. Like, Paulie understood what I was doing even more so than I did at the beginning. You know, obviously, you know, nobody knows the character better than me, but in the very beginning, I was still finding my way with this, you know, because I was putting so much, as you say, my personal life into it. And I think Paulie saw that immediately. And what was cool was that bookers always see themselves through the eyes of certain characters. Like Dusty wanted, just for example, okay, like Vince. Vince sees himself as the $1 million man and Lex Luger the Patriot. Because Vince is very patriotic and he's also the $1 million man, you know, or not, he's the $1 billion man, I guess. But
I don't know, stock prices are dropping today, so maybe not.
XFL comes out in a couple weeks, we'll see.
What's that?
XFL's debuting in a couple weeks, so we'll see.
But so he saw himself as through those characters' eyes, you know, and you have a find a way to use those characters to their fullest because that's who you see. Like Dusty really, I think Dusty saw PN News as a could be Dusty character, but it never turned out. But you know, with the rapping, you know, and the big side, you know, and the, but it never turned out the way he wanted. But I feel like that was one of the, you know, but Paulie always saw himself through my eyes and through Dreamer's eyes, you know, so it worked out perfectly, you know, because we were all on the same page.
I really watch AEW.
I really like AEW because, like, I like that there's a new company, you know, and a new place. And I'm really excited that they signed a new, 4 or 5 year deal or something.
Yeah, extended to TNT.
Yeah, so that they're going to be there, you know, because it's so horrible for the business when there's no competition and it's bad for the business, it's bad for the product, it's bad for the fans, it's bad for everybody. And the boys don't get to make money, you know.
The Darby Allin character in AEW, I find there's a couple similarities I find between the old Raven character and yourself. Have you been following any of his career trajectory?
Yeah, I like him. I like him. I really think I really think the alpha needs there's so many minor changes I would make, like, but I really think he's a hell of a talent, and I think he's got a great look, but I think he's not maximizing completely. But then again, no, who is? Nobody really is. I mean, you need that's why you always have to be produced in a promo. You know, like I know I could give him a few tips that would change certain things, and maybe I'm the only one who would notice them, or maybe, you know, the boys are, because, you know, the fans maybe don't see this, it's just smaller stuff, but they know something's different. But he definitely, I'd like to hear him talk. Mm-hmm. But I have pointers for everybody, you know. I mean, people need to have more psychology and more selling. I mean, that's the bottom line. completely across the board, you know?
Yeah, there's not a lot of selling in AEW. It's a lot of just
But he sells, though.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I love the fact that Cody sells his ass off.
Yeah.
You know? And so for all the talk that they're all high spots in AEW, I disagree with that, you know? But I also think that there's a place for that, and that's in the tag team division where they do it, you know? Yeah. And you need variety, you know? You need mixture. But yeah, I'd love to take Darby Allin under my wing, him or Jimmy Havoc. You know, I think there's so much I could help them with.
Yeah.
Not that they aren't amazingly talented already. So I'm not trying to detract from them.
Yeah.
But I feel like what I could offer them would be, you know, amazing.
Yeah. I know you said you're not really watching much WWE, but are you familiar with the Fiend gimmick? Have you seen like many promos or?
I didn't even know what Bray Wyatt looked like until until after a couple years you've been doing it, I'm like, and everybody keep bringing it up to me that I finally had to. Yeah. Look him up on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's a great look.
Yeah.
You know? And then when he came out with the Playhouse or whatever.
Yeah, Firefly.
So I had to tune into one of those, and I was like, wow, it's really impressive. You know, it's really entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think he sees himself less as, like, people always say that it's a Raven-based character, but I think it's more based on Danny Spivey's Waylon Mercy character.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of those similarities there, too.
Yeah, because also Spivey is, one of his dad's best friends, right?
Yes.
Mike Rotundo's kid or something?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Nice.
So I think it's more that. So so I'm honored that people think that based on me, but...
Yeah.
Or not based on me, but, you know, but influenced by me.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't know if it is.
Who knows?
When you left ECW, when you were at the very top of that federation... for WCW, I was just curious what your expectations were heading into the company at that point. Like what you wanted to, what you saw yourself achieving.
In WCW?
Yeah.
I wanted to be world champion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I always felt like I could have been, but I burned my bridges. I mean, I always thought I was the smartest guy in the room, which I may not have been, and many times I definitely wasn't, you know, but there were times I was. But I had to make sure everybody knew it.
Yeah.
And I was so egotistical because I was so insecure. You know, and it took a lot of time on a shrink's couch, you know, to finally be, you know, to finally look at myself with a value of self-worth. But because my self-worth value was so low. And so I burned a lot of bridges. So part of the reason I didn't go further was because of that, you know. And so I can't blame other people Very few cases was it their fault that I didn't get used well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously they could have made me, you could have used me better, but I don't blame them, like, you know, I still have my grievances, mm-hmm. But who doesn't?
There's got to be a lot that you were happy with, though, with what they did with the Flock and WCW.
Yeah, right? The way they used me when I came in, you know, the fact I got to work with Paulie for two years and got to work with him twice. You know, and be on top with him, you know, and you, Paulie's best stuff, the most creative stuff Paulie's ever done, you know, and be involved in that, you know, at the top with the most creative stuff I've ever done together, you know, with nobody I would ever choose anybody, but if you gave me a pick so you can have anybody to book you in any storyline, I'd pick Paulie instantly, you know, guy's a genius.
Welcome back to the Cold Canvas Radio Show with Big Al Brody. Broadcasting from 12 Kings Pub, Vancouver's home of combat sports on Sportsnet 650.
And welcome back to the Cold Canvas Radio Show. It's Big Al Brody, Brody El Toro. Thanks again to Raven and our good friends at Dot Pop Concerts for granting us that little interview there. I'm sitting here with Wrestlin' Rob. We are going to finally, Rob, talk a little AEW. I wanted to dedicate the next 10 minutes to the Roman Corbin feud, but you finally twisted my arm and said, Brody, why don't we do a little AEW? We've never done it before. So, without further ado, let's start with the main event. How effectively has this feud been built? And do you think we're going to see Jon Moxley dethrone Le Champion at Revolution?
Well, first of all, I'm just super excited that, A, we get to talk about AEW here on the air. And I'm even more excited for this first pay-per-view 2020, AEW Revolution, as we all know, taking place on February 29th, that extra day we got in 2020, we get ourselves a wrestling pay-per-view. And yeah, as you mentioned, the main event has Jon Moxley against Le Champion Chris Jericho. And I think Moxley has been one of the hottest acts since he jumped over to AEW. And I think the way they've been building this feud with him against the entire Inner Circle has been going well. At the time of recording here, he's gone through Santana and Ortiz. He's got a tough match next week against the hitman that they brought in, the incomparable Jeff Cobb. But I think the beatdowns are going to happen on Dynamite all the way up until they get to Revolution. And I think it's the time is now for a title change at the top. And I think we're going to see Jon Moxley leaving AEW Revolution as the new AEW champion.
Now, the two have worked an angle before in the WWE, and it was excellent. Mm. But this one is leaps and bounds above that one.
Yeah.
And there's still two episodes to go before Revolution.
Yep, we got the Jeff Cobb encounter next week.
That's
and
right.
And who knows what's going to happen on that go-home
Well,
show.
It's fair to say that Jon Moxley is a totally different animal in AEW. Mm-hmm. He was top wrestler of the year in 2019, according to many. He's really just found his home and a place that kind of lets him have that creative control that he needs to thrive. Mm-hmm. Jericho, what more can be said, right?
Not much. Not much.
I really don't know what's going to happen, and that's what kind of makes this one so intriguing to me. Jericho will be going on tour with Fozzy soon, and many pundits are saying that the company should strike while the iron's hot with Moxley, and I do get that. But to me, this is not a passing of the torch scenario. Nor is it necessarily a generational shift. Not yet, anyways.
No.
Because to me, Jericho is still the top guy in the company, and the Inner Circle is still a relatively new faction. It's not Hogan, NWO, Sting territory yet. It's been 8 weeks, not 80. So if I had my way, Robbie, I would have Jericho retain. I just don't see why he has to lose this one right now. And I think the feud still has legs. And I'd love to see Jericho reign for a full calendar year or even more. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to have Jericho do segments and promos on the road as champion. Maybe even on stage in between songs. You know what I mean? He could taunt Moxley or whomever he's feuding with at the time and just kind of further embellish that rock star lifestyle gimmick. So how about this? Here's my prediction. I say that Moxley gets the win, but it's going to be by DQ, it's going to infuriate the fans, and it's going to lead to a longer program between the two.
I hate it. I don't like that at all.
Now, on to maybe the most anticipated bout of the evening. I'm talking about that MJF versus Cody. Who do you see emerging the victor, and do you think this will mark the end of the feud between the two?
I honestly have no idea who's going to win this one. Cody's been literally bleeding and sweating for this company since AEW started. He got busted open on the ramp. He had that bloody feud with his brother Dustin several months ago. And just this last week or the week before, he took those 10 lashes. And it's just been an insane just sacrifice that Cody's made. But this story with MJF has been brewing for maybe a year now. It started on the Being the Elite YouTube show that with the Young Bucks and Cody. And MJF was kind of taken under Cody's wing during that time. And there was always kind of, it seemed like it was just a matter of time before MJF turned on him. We all kind of saw it coming, but when he threw in the towel and then kicked him in the junk at that pay-per-view, then we knew it was off to the races with this feud. And I just think it's going to be hard to decide, and that's what I like so much about pro wrestling is that they've woven this story. It's been consistent the whole way through. There's been a thread through the narrative the entire time. And I'm honestly going into the match, and I don't know who wins. And honestly, at the end of it, whoever has their hand raised, I'm going to be pretty happy with how that turns out.
Yeah. Also recently added to the card was Dustin Rhodes and Jake Hager. And it looks like we're going to be getting Sammy versus Darby Allin.
Yes.
Now, Robbie, this card is looking absolutely stacked.
Stacked. Top to bottom, front to back, bell to bell. Well, however many terms you want to use for it.
I do want to say this real quickly. I got into a heated debate with somebody at the Royal Rumble a couple weeks back about who should dethrone Jericho. And this guy, he's going on and on about how hot Moxley is. And, well, technically. And I said, shut up. All right?
Yep.
I sent him straight to Dirt Nap City, Robbie, but not before gifting him with my hot take. I think the man who should usurp Le Champion is Dustin Rhodes.
Dustin Rhodes, eh?
The dude still works like velvet. He is as over as a pancake that needs to be flipped to the other side because the top is bubbling, signifying that you should flip it over.
Yeah, I've cooked pancakes before. I get it.
Just think how great that program would be between him and Jericho, booked as a one last shot at the title for Dustin.
Yeah.
As we all know, he's never won the big one. And there is nobody in pro wrestling today that is more deserving, I feel, than Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah.
Sammy and Darby, I mean, geez Louise, pass the biscuits and snow peas. That is going to be sensational.
Yep.
I simply can't wait. You know what? AEW, it gets me all giddy, Rob.
Get you all excited. I'm finally happy I got you excited about this. Well, what are you doing on the 29th? You want to come over and watch Revolution?
I probably will have a hot date that night.
Okay. You can bring her if you want. Girls like wrestling, too.
Some of them.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll also see the debut of Jeff Cobb.
Yes, we touched on this earlier. Yeah, I'm very, very excited about this in-ring debut of Jeff Cobb.
He's a monster.
Yes.
But probably the least menacing wrestling name I've ever heard.
Yeah, I just got a regular dude name, but you see him, and it's just unreal. I've had the pleasure of seeing him a few times here in Vancouver at the Ballroom Brawls with ECCW, and every time he just blows you away with his athleticism, his strength. He's just got the look of a guy who's going to whoop your ass in the ring and have no problems doing it again, even if you're hurt. He's just an amazing talent.
You know what he looks like? He looks like a hybrid mix of Rhino and Pac.
You know, that's not a bad analogy. He doesn't have that accent, though, that Pac has, though, so that makes him a little more serious.
Robbie, you and I are actually, we're sitting here at 12 Kings Pub at the very booth that we met at a couple years ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're rekindling the old magic.
But we are just a couple hours away from WWE SmackDown.
Yes.
First time ever that event has come to Vancouver.
Yep. 17 years since the TV trucks have rolled into the great city of Vancouver. You can watch it live on Sportsnet. It's going to be on Fridays, but you guys probably already know that. And, yeah, I'm real excited. There's a little wrestling fan inside of me that's always wanted to see one of these big events. And here I am now. You know, into my 30s now. It's been a long time since I was a wrestling fan, and now I kind of actually get to see a show that actually means something, get to be in that wide crowd shot that they start the show off with, and it's going to be a special moment, regardless of what happens.
It's the best time of year to be a wrestling fan. It's never a bad time, but right now, in particular, is the best time of the year to be a wrestling fan.
Yes.
Next month, it's also a great time to be a Cold Canvas fan.
Always a great time
to be a Cold Canvas. Tell the folks about our social media that we got cooking up for them this month.
Well, once again, we'll be pretty active on our Instagram, at the Cold Canvas. We'll continue to promote our shows, our guests. We're going to be continuing to add our predictions to our Instagram feed as well. We had the predictions for the last UFC card. The next event that we're going to be covering is obviously AEW Revolution. We got a good guest lined up for that one. And we're also going to be doing Elimination Chamber, which is the next main WWE show. I don't count the Saudi Arabia shows, so we'll be covering Elimination Chamber. And then it's full speed to the road to WrestleMania, and we've got some really good things lined up for that. Once again, we'll be hosting here at 12 Kings for the WrestleMania viewing party, so stay tuned for some information about that, information about prizes and booking your tables and all that stuff. And we're going to be doing something really good for the predictions for that. Do you want to touch on that, Brody?
Yeah, well, we're going to have lots of special guests on the next edition. It's going to be basically a full show dedicated to the granddaddy of them all.
Yeah.
Getting you folks jacked up for WrestleMania Pirate Ship.
WrestleMania Pirate Ship. You didn't see it, but Brody actually just pointed to a non-existent WrestleMania sign here. And, yeah, we're both getting excited for it. We got a big night of wrestling ahead of us here. Like you said, we're going to see SmackDown tonight. And, yeah, thanks for having me again, Brody. It's been fun.
Hey, man, always a pleasure. Up next, we are going to have Professor Lucas from Gracie Baja, Vancouver's number one jiu-jitsu academy. So keep it locked to the Cold Canvas Radio Show on Sportsnet 650.
Was I supposed to sing that, too?
Yes.
Okay, maybe next time.
If you are looking for an authentic taste of Italia, Bellagio Cafe is the place. With two dazzling locations on Hornby Street and the Convention Center, Bellagio is open 7 days a week, 365 days a year for breakfast, brunch, lunch, and dinner. It's the perfect cafe for all occasions. Company parties, family gatherings, or romantic dinner, when you dine at Bellagio Cafe, you will be met with a seamless blend of world charm and modern techniques. Bellagio also offers a world-class cocktail menu and delectable dessert options, happy hour appetizer and drink options, every day from 3 to 6 p.m. Bring your family and mention the Cold Canvas Radio Show, and your little bambinis will eat for 50% off. It's a limited time offer, so call and make your reservation, or simply drop by one of two Bellagio Cafe locations at 773 Hornby, directly across from the Art Gallery, or 1055 Canada Place Convention Center. Treat yourself to the taste of Italia at Bellagio Cafe. Ciao. Big Al Brody here. I'm always on the lookout for vintage clothing, and a few weeks back, I stumbled into the coolest shop in the city, Stocks Vintage. It's at 370 East Broadway. It's right inside the Kingsgate Mall. Every time I go into this place, I come out with something that I love. Shirts, sweaters, cardigans, hats, scarves, buttons, shoes, you name it, Stocks Vintage has racks and bundles of literally everything, and the prices are always unbelievable. The other day, I found an orange NASA sweater with all the Apollo mission crests on the sleeve. And every time I wear this thing, I can't walk down the street without five people stopping me and asking me where I got it. I tell them all I got it at the best vintage clothing and accessory store in the city, Stocks Vintage. You can hit them up on their Facebook page, at Stocks Vintage, that's with two X's. Check out their latest offers and items. Stocks is a Canadian company since 1998, and they are now here in Van City. Visit them today at the Kingsgate Mall and get ready to pop some tags at Stocks Vintage. Now that you are looking sharp and presentable, you're probably going to feel that tummy start grumbling. But don't fret, because you're in luck. Frenchie's Restaurant, the home of the authentic Montreal poutine and smoked meat, is right around the corner on Broadway and Main Street. Grab a seat. Say bonjour to the little man, Michel. Maybe you order Blanche de Chamblay. Hockey season is here, so you know the Habs will be on the screen. Listen, some of these other places, they're what the French call les incompetents when it comes to their poutines. They throw everything but their gam-gams pearl earrings on the darn things. Not French's. You get a real authentic Montreal poutine with cheese curds and that world-famous Saint-Hubert gravy. Come nighttime when that thing is swimming around in your belly, and those Habs are lighting up the red lamp like Rudolph's nose on a Christmas morning, you're gonna think you're on Church Street in Montreal, Quebec. It's the real deal. And if you mention that you heard about Frenchie's Restaurant on the Cold Canvas Radio Show, you can upgrade your side to a poutine absolutely free. It's their way of saying merci, which means thank you. Drop by Frenchie's Restaurant at 2470 Main Street tonight. Are you looking for that perfect restaurant to host a family get-together or work party? Well, I'm here to tell you that you need look no further than the Italian Tomato. The Italian Tomato would like to welcome you all to the Davie neighborhood by offering live entertainment and 10% off all takeout items. This Valentine's Day, the Italian Tomato brings to you the sultry crooning styles of Mr. Dave Warren, and every Tuesday night this month, you can catch the incomparable drag performer, Connie Smudge, lighting up the room with song and laughter. With a brand new location at 1047 Davie Street, the Italian Tomato offers family-sized pasta portions that you've got to see to believe, a brand new cocktail list, weekly specials, as well as happy hour and lunch menus, and signature dishes like their world-famous meat lasagna. Hey, they even got a menu for those little bambinos, too. When Brody the Bull thinks pasta, he thinks Italian Tomato. Call 604-687-0055 to book your reservation, or just drop by their brand new location at 1047 Davie Street.
Hey, it's Big Al Brody, the Cold Canvas Radio Show. Sorry we missed your call. Please leave a message, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Hello to the Cold Canvas crew. It's me, Tom Berenger, America's favorite substitute. This isn't really easy for a guy like me, but I wanted to apologize for smoking inside 12 Kings Pub a couple weekends ago. What can I say? I'm a cigar aficionado, and it was the Royal Rumble. I just hope this won't impact my appearance at WrestleMania. Love you, Brody. Keep up the good work.
Welcome back to the Cold Canvas Radio Show. Get your cut man ready and get your hands up, because here's your host, Big Al Brody, and he's coming in swinging on Sportsnet 650.
And welcome back to the program, folks. I'm kicking it here at 12 Kings Pub, Vancouver's one and only home of combat sports. I'm with Professor Lucas Gracie Baja, the number one jiu-jitsu academy here in the city. He is a Montreal native, fierce competitor, multiple IBJJF gold medalist, and he happens to teach right down the street at Main Street location, which is where I am a student. He's also a pro wrestling fan, right?
Yes, exactly. And thanks for having me, by the way.
Hey, pleasure. Awesome. Thanks for dropping by. In fact, if I remember correctly, it was wrestling that kind of led you to martial arts.
Yes, exactly. So I started watching Brock Lesnar fighting the WWE, and then he transitioned into MMA, so then it started piquing my interest, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll start doing this MMA thing, you know, get a feel out of it. You know, it's more accessible than trying out pro wrestling or something. And and then I fell in love with jiu-jitsu, joined Gracie Baja, and then that's it, white to black.
There you go. When the student is ready, the teacher appears is an expression that a lot of people are familiar with. Did you have a professor or professors that really influenced you and kind of molded you into the champion competitor you are today?
Yes, for sure. So my professor back home in Montreal, Bruno Fernandez, so multiple-time world champion, four-time in all the belts. He got third at black belt as well at the world. Ophthalmologist, you know, just overall. Mr. Rodrigo is really great. And Professor Felipe is really good. I could learn a lot from him. Professor Chad. A lot of professors down in Montreal as well.
Would you say that jiu-jitsu changed you as a person? Helped you kind of deal with life's difficulties, personal struggles?
Yes, for sure. So like, starting jiu-jitsu, anxious and aggressive in a way, too. So it was the perfect outlet for me to, like, get all my aggression out and my anxiety out. And then after you're done training, like, once you do a class, after you're done training, you're as, like, mellow as anything, you know, you can think of.
I think that's the best word to use. You're mellow.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of paradoxical because it's such an aggressive sport.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't leave feeling like you want to go take on the world. Like,
yeah, exactly. You're just like, okay, I just want to, like, chill out, eat.
Man, you're zen.
You know, get some good food and then, you know, go to bed or something.
Yeah, it's one thing to start jiu-jitsu, and it's an entirely different thing to kind of stay with it. There is kind of a big plummet in the blue belt stage, kind of known as the blue belt blues. I'm not saying this to deter people from signing up, but it is something that happens. What are some of those frustrations that people face, and what kind of advice would you give to get them over that hump?
The blue belt curse is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're starting to feel those blues, so you just have to keep at it, you know, like don't put so much pressure. Right, everyone reaches plateaus, you know, even like every belt color, you get plateaus, and you just have to keep going, you know, find new ways to kind of like visiting other gyms around, you know, like other Gracie Bas, which is great about Gracie Ba. You can, changing up the training a bit, you know, and just keep persisting.
Well, it's always different, right? I mean, one day you think you've got it,
mm-hmm.
and then the next day you roll with someone, their game's different. They may be at the same belt level as you, but for whatever reason, on that day, the techniques you were utilizing the day before.
Everyone's getting better with you, right? So the person you beat yesterday is probably going to figure out how to beat your move the next day. And then you're like, oh, okay, you're frustrated that your move's not working against them. But that's just going to help you keep progressing in the end. So you have to kind of like keep actively thinking about how to keep improving, so eventually you can, you know, overcome, you know, people getting better with you.
Yeah, at first for me it was very frustrating. I mean, I am still new to the game, don't get me wrong, but I have a pretty big ego, and I didn't like getting tapped out at all, like especially by people who were smaller than me. But now it's kind of become a sport of endless curiosity and intrigue for me. And I was tapped out the other day by a purple belt, and it was just like this fascinating choke. And I kind of, rather than getting steamed and wanting to get right back in there, it was more like, well, that was interesting. So I guess that means I've been humbled to a point over the last 10 months. And I just was wondering, did you have that same problem when you started out? Did you not like...
Yeah, of course. Ego is a big part of the jiu-jitsu. You know, I actually think it's good to have a ego, because if you're getting tapped out, you don't care. You're not going to like force yourself to improve, right? So you have to have a bit of that ego and then come back stronger the next day, figure out like what the problem was, like technique-wise, and maybe mentally, fix whatever was on your head and just come back stronger the next day. So it's always a good thing, but you also can't like let it destroy you. And
it can also drive certain people away.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly, and make you go crazy. So, you have to take it with a grain of salt, and it just like help have it push you to get yourself better in general.
Gracie Baja also runs the after school program, which I think is like a genius idea, and it separates Gracie Baja from the rest of the academies in the city. You drive the van around the city.
Yes, I do.
tell the good folks what that's all about. All
right. So, like around 2 p.m. actually. So I have to go run off and do that after.
Yeah.
I go in the van. I go to each school. I pick up the kids. And then we come back, go back to the gym and then I drop them off. Get a helper to take them out of the car, and then they go down, and then they get to do their activities before jiu-jitsu class. So they do some arts and crafts, they do some fun games, they have snacks, they get to enjoy their time before jiu-jitsu, which is really cool.
Yeah, not only is like martial arts one of the best things you could possibly put your child in, but now the convenient factor for parents. They don't got to worry about picking their child up, taking them there. I think it's such an awesome program. What made you kind of decide that you wanted to teach? Was it kind of a feeling that you wanted to give back?
Yeah, for sure. I've always had it in my head that I want to teach one day. I actually, in high school, I was like, oh, I can be a good teacher. Like, why not I try to be a teacher like one day, like a high school teacher or something. So it was always in like the back of my head, like I want to maybe teach one day. And then I started doing jiu-jitsu. I was like, oh man, like people have a pretty good living teaching jiu-jitsu. So I always had that in the back of my head, and I want to be as good as I can be, right, to eventually teach, actually. So I always tried my hardest as a white belt. Since white belt, I actually thought about, like, maybe teaching. And then as you keep progressing, right, then it becomes more of a reality. I actually started teaching at blue belt, right? So teaching at, like, a gym that just opened back in Montreal, the West Island, actually. And then it just grew from there, and then I started taking up more classes, and then I'm here, teaching full time in Vancouver, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool that the sport kind of led you to what you intentionally had visioned that you would be doing. So you get to do like both the things that you love doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it just worked out perfectly.
I understand that you also had the chance to train with Georges Rush St. Pierre at one point.
Yes.
Did you not? How was that?
Yeah, so because he was originally from Gracie Baja, Montreal. And he actually got his black belt from my professor, Bruno Fernandez. All right, so he would always come down to Gracie Baja, Montreal, sometimes train the gi. And one time, like, he was there, and, like, it was this is when it was a blue belt, and we got to train. And it was really cool to roll with him, to get to feel, like, that that top pressure that he's so good at, and feel his, like, single legs, his wrestling is so good.
That must have been awesome.
Yeah, really, really cool experience.
What was he, where was he at that point in his career?
I think he was taking a break or something, and then he was about to fight Nick Diaz, actually.
Oh, huge fight.
Yeah.
Wow. So who are some of your favorite grapplers to watch, and some of your favorite current fighters?
So currently, there's Keenan Cornelius. He's, like, more my style, long, lanky guy. He plays a lot of, like, funky guards, so I'm technical enough to say, like, I can actually play those funky guards, those more modern guards. And Leandro Lowe, another, like, long, lanky guy, more straightforward with his technique, which is, like, what I like to do also, just be like, okay, I need a sweep, I just go really hard for that sweep or something, or the submission or the pass. So mostly those two. There's Braulio Estima, who's really good. Great Gracie Baja black belt. So another guy who's really long.
Yeah,
tall.
You try
so
to find guys that you can mimic based on physical appearance. That's cool.
Exactly.
What about for fighters in the UFC? Who are you digging on these days?
So the guy who just fought, John Jones,
yeah.
You know, another long, lanky guy.
Which I was just going to ask you
one
about.
One of the GOATs.
Yeah.
That was really impressive. I always loved to watch GSP. I was obviously a hometown boy. I'm not watching too much UFC right now. Obviously, all the big cards, McGregor, you know, is always fun to watch. I don't know, that's about it. I like Daniel Cormier also.
What did you think about the Jones decision? You gave your prediction on our Instagram account there. What did you think of the outcome?
Yep. I got the right prediction, so I'm happy about that. But I was not too impressed with Jones. Obviously, he didn't really go for it in the match, and I thought he could have capitalized a bit more in some situations. But he did what he could. You know, Reyes was running around a lot. And Jones was controlling the octagon, and then I guess it looked good for the judges.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's really hard. Decision. It's really hard to kind of give Reyes that after rounds 4 and 5.
Yeah, I agree. Because he didn't do anything; he was just running around. But it was that, you know, it's a toss up. The third round, I think it was a toss up. You know, so you know when you're facing a champ, you really have to beat the champ and really show your dominance. Mm-hmm. Show that you're better than the champ.
Well, we are on the road to WrestleMania right now, as you know. And as a fellow wrestling fan, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you if you have a favorite WrestleMania moment.
Yes. So going back to WrestleMania 18, so The Rock versus Hulk Hogan. So I was a huge Rock fan. I was a huge Hulk Hogan fan. Actually, I didn't get to watch too much of Hulk Hogan when I was a kid. But then when he came back, I was like, oh my God, Hulk Hogan is here, you know, and he's wrestling The Rock. This is insane. So I watched that. It was like the craziest moment ever. And the crowd behind it was like really.
Oh, it was nuts. I was actually there. I was in attendance for that one. And it was earth shattering.
I'm sure.
It was just crazy. But thank you so much for taking time out. I know you're busy. Thursdays, you teach all day. You got to go pick up the little Rugrats.
Yes.
In about an hour or two, right? It's a real honor for me to get the chance to promote Gracie Baja on the program and the sport of jiu-jitsu because in my life. Folks, if you're looking to make a change in the new year and instill discipline, confidence, improve not just physically, but mentally, spiritually, if you suffer from addiction, depression, anxiety, or you're just looking to join a team and try something new, I'm telling you, jiu-jitsu is the sport and Gracie Baja is the place. With locations in Burnaby, Kitsilano, North Vancouver, and on Main Street, you can just drop by or you can sign up, you or your child, online at graciebaja.com. And I do believe that there's an Instagram account now as well,
yes.
At GB Vancouver.
Yes, that's it.
And get this. If you mention that you heard about the club on the Cold Canvas Radio Show, you're going to score yourself a free month of training. Trust me, it's amazing how much you can learn and fall in love with jiu-jitsu in just 4 weeks. So thank you so much for stopping by. We'll see you on the mats.
All right, thanks so much.
And that is it for us, folks. The Cold Canvas crew thanks you for listening. We're going to be coming at you next month for our WrestleMania spectacular episode. We're going to have special guests to get you all jazzed up for the granddaddy of them all. The CC is also once again going to be joining up with 12 Kings Pub to present that one here at the home of combat sports. There's going to be trivia. There's going to be prizes. There's going to be games. There's going to be celebrity appearances and much, much more. But until then, keep your hands up, kids. For the Cold Canvas on Sportsnet 650, this is Big Al Brody signing out.